The band did some instrumental songs as well, I understand. Do you remember some of the instrumental songs the band would have done?
We did Coming Home, Baby.
Where did you hear that song first?
Well, I mean, where me personally heard it? Yeah. I mean, I would say I first heard it on Herbie Mann at the Village Gate, which is a very popular... See, I used to read Downbeat when I was in high school, so I knew all about jazz. Okay. And that's where I first came in contact with Coming Home, Baby. But then it was used a lot by bands for a break song. And I don't think we didn't have any break song, but for some reason we did do this song. You know, I bet you Bill picked that song up from Keith Zeller when mm-hmm. he was playing with Keith Zeller.
Makes
I bet
sense.
You know. And then we, Memphis, which Lonnie Mack had a big hit with Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
So we did it as an instrumental. I mean, who didn't do it as an instrumental back then? Actually, you'd be unusual if you did the vocal version.
We mentioned a number of armories and other places you performed up north. Do you recall playing at the Blazer in Nisswa?
I have to say this in my own words. I have a sticker, a patch that says the Blazer. So I figured we must have played there.
Rick, you mentioned Battle of the Bands, the band played at. Do you recall who was on the bill and where that was located?
I remember this because Beethoven's Mafia became CA Quintet, which
right.
is another band that I was in. And then the Defiance was a band, and they had this really good guitar player, Wally Walstead. I mean, he's a jazz guy now. He was a jazz guy then. But I remember playing at Wilmer, right? Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I remember it like it was only yesterday.
There were also local battles of the bands that were held at Aldridge Arena. Do you recall playing there?
Well, yes. Funny you should mention that. I remember playing there at the Battle of Bands with the Tabs. And, you know, I don't know if it was I think the whole band was really looking forward to it. But we ended up playing outside on the sidewalk. We didn't get to go in with the big guys.
Who were the big guys, do you recall?
Well, there was Michael's Mystics was there. I think the Morticians were there. Maybe the Chancellors were there. I don't know if Gregory... You'd think that Gregory D and the Underbeats and all those guys would have been there, but I'm not... I think maybe the Underbeats were there.
Are you talking about Aldridge Arena?
Yeah.
By the way, you're wrong. We played inside. There was only 10 people there. It was back when I was afraid to move one muscle. My sister was there with her boyfriend. We got through with the job. I go up there and they said, "Boy, you don't move, do you?" I mean, I was like a statue. And I had to be Aldridge Arena.
And you didn't move because?
I was afraid to.
So it's an early job.
Yeah.
So tell me some of the other places in town in the Twin Cities that the Tabs would have played at.
Jeez. That's a hard one.
Really?
Was it hard to get jobs in the Twin Cities with so much competition in this time period?
The musicians' union stood in the way.
So you had to join the union?
Yes.
Well, we were, yeah. But the only in-town job I can remember is we were down at the Roaring Twenties. On Hennepin Avenue.
In downtown Minneapolis.
Downtown Minneapolis. And that was with the Tabs.
Okay.
I don't think they'd let us in, though.
Well, I don't know what it was. I mean, we...
Kind of go along with me.
Oh,
it's a joke.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Dan. I missed that.
Now, at some point, you made a switch.
Come on over here, Denny, and you...
We need you.
At some point, you made a switch from the Dick Blonigan Agency as your booking agent and went to David Anthony Productions. How did that happen?
His jobs in Wisconsin in hotels and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember we played over in Appleton, Wisconsin. It was the longest drive I ever was going to. And then there was yes, I remember that.
The place in Appleton was the Country Air.
Was that the name of it?
Yeah.
This guy knows everything.
What was it called?
The Country Air.
The Country Air.
Yeah. And then, that's right, that was a David Anthony. Okay.
Did you have to audition to play for David Anthony?
I don't remember that.
I think you just knew Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
What other places in Wisconsin do you recall?
Not with the Tabs. I mean, there's
no. We're staying with the Tabs. This is the Tabs.
Well, I remember Appleton because it was in those days it was such a far drive. I mean, it must have been a 4 or 5 hour drive.
I thought it was right across the border.
No.
So.
Because I don't remember us playing down in down in Ellsworth at like Proches or that kind of. I don't.
Okay.
You must have played Chippewa Falls, Menominee, Stout State. Those are all Dave Anthony places.
Chippewa Falls, Stout State. You know, Stout State rings a bell. I think maybe we did play there.
That's at college in Wisconsin.
I mean, I it gets kind of rough because I've been in so many bands and I. But I think Stout State, I think we did play there with the Tabs.
Okay.
Yeah.
At some point here, the VW Microbus becomes replaced with a brand new vehicle. What's the story behind that?
Hey, don't just skip by this bus that we had. It took us, all of us, and all our equipment around, and we beat the hell out of it. We went through two engines.
That's right.
And
we broke the crankshaft. The guy couldn't believe it when he said he broke the crankshaft. Yeah.
And it was all because of you that we got to use it and get around. Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Yes, I was an integral part of the band at that time.
I'm sorry, I just started this. I'll go back to where we were.
Can't get rid of him. He has the bus.
Okay, so at some point, the beloved VW Microbus is retired as the band vehicle. And a new
Volkswagen Heaven.
And the new vehicle is a what?
I think it was a 1966 Ford Club Econoline.
That's good.
Is that the extended one? With the
most definitely.
Okay, and the new band vehicle came from who?
That wonderful lady, Bill's mother.
Yes.
Mrs. Stranlock.
And, you know, I have to say that she was a terrific lady. A little odd, but, I mean, she loved Bill.
Billy.
Billy. And Bill's old man hated Bill.
Yes.
He just hated him because he had the long hair.
Oh.
I think he was, now they would call him homophobic. Mm. And he'd walk in.
A quick story about Bill and his dad. He had long bangs, and they went into his eyes. So he was always pushing them aside and swishing his head. And he was the one driving. His dad was right next to him in the front seat. And finally, his dad said, "I can't take it anymore. Quit doing that." And Bill just cracked up. He just was loving it. Oh.
So he knew that was bothering his dad.
Well, he was flicking his ashes on me through the window, and I was sitting in the back of him. But.
So Bill would know how to push people's buttons.
Oh, he loved
it. Oh, yeah. I think we all did pretty good at that in those days.
I'm trying to sort of imagine here that you guys finish a job somewhere up in Hibbing or Virginia or Eveleth or wherever. And it's like 1 a.m. or later. Perhaps you might have stopped at a truck stop to get a bite to eat or something like that. And you walk into the truck stop with the long hair, and what happened?
As usual, nobody would actually go into truck stops with me because they knew what would happen. Yeah, but I'd go in there just waiting. I knew it was going to happen. And some guy would say something dishonorable to me. And with all of his friends standing there, he's standing there challenging me. And I don't know what I did, but he crumbled. He'll never be able to face his friends again. They know he's just full of talk, air, nothing.
What did he say to you, Dan?
"You're lower than an N."
The N-word.
Yes.
Okay.
I used to get a lot of that, and that's why I had my hair long. I enjoyed that. I just loved putting people in their place. They think they had the right to say really mean things to you. And I never had a fight. I was crazy.
So you never backed down.
And they
down.
Knew it. I would grab the nearest fork, the nearest bottle, run up and, what'd you say? And they'd go, Jesus Christ.
So you got in their face.
Oh, never stopped.
And that brought an end to the conversation.
It was my enjoyments. I just loved it so bad.
He was an a-hole, wasn't he?
So what happens next in the history of the Tabs?
Well, I broke up the Tabs.
What happened?
One of the band members said something rude to me, which I didn't deserve, and we had a confrontation, and it kind of broke up the band. Bill and me stayed together.
So at some point here, I believe it's May of 66, there's a change in the lineup of the band members. What is the change?
Well, as I understand it, Preston left, and that was enough for me. Then I left and went with another band. And I think they picked up a couple other players. Dan would know that because he was still there.
Dan, who replaced Bowen on bass?
Oh, Terry Bellows.
Had he been in a band before?
I have no clue. I don't know how Bill found him, but he found a new drummer and a new bass player.
Okay, so the new...
I never did any of that stuff, so finding people.
Okay, so Terry Bellows takes over on bass guitar, and who takes over on drums?
Rory Lee. He was only 15, but he looked like 25. I mean, this guy was good-looking. Chicks melting over this guy. And I ran into him years later, and the girls would come up to him in the bar and hand him their telephone numbers.
I guess that was an upgrade for the band after I left.
Come on. Anyway, I wasn't saying that. But I guess we didn't... I don't know why we broke up.
Are you talking about conflicts between band members?
Yes.
And that's typical for most bands, right?
That was my only problem.
Every band has conflicts,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Rick, how about you? Any special memory you have of the Tabs?
I'm giving this some serious thought. This is going to be a real saccharine kind of answer, but I can't think of one job that sticks out as more memorable than the other.
I can't either.
But I can remember that I look forward to going to every job and playing music. And it didn't matter where we played. It was just the idea of the, you know, that communication that occurs between musicians through the medium of music. That's everything. So I can't designate, oh, well, when we played in Evelith, wow. No, yeah. I mean, it would have to be when we played Evelith, Hibbing, Floodwood, Aldrich Arena. Every job was great.
I would like to say that we were always consistent. He was good all the time. He didn't ever have a bad night or a good night. He was just always there.
Okay, that's
good. Yeah, you know, I just look forward to every job. That's all I can say. I mean...
Well, true. When you got done with a job on a Saturday night, you could not wait for the next Friday night to where you could play again.
Yeah.
And those five days in between were just hell waiting for the next job.
Those 5 days of waiting for the next job were like nothing. You know, it was just nothing. You know, it was like getting on that stage and performing before an audience.
I felt special.
Dan,
Dan,
were you nervous your first time on stage?
I couldn't move a muscle.
Did you get over it eventually?
I moved at the end of one job. In the last beat of the song, I went and I said to the roadie, did I do too much? He said, no, that was cool. I mean, I was paralyzed up there.
You told me, Dan, earlier that after you sang your...
Come See About Me.
Your throat was sore for a while.
Oh. Yes.
Which means you belted him out?
I screamed. I didn't sing.
You screamed.
Yeah, you did great on that, just like me.
Thank you. Yeah. That was one of my...
That was killer.
Well, that was one of my power songs.
I mean, you put everything that you had into that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I did.
So the Tabs come to an end, and what goes on next? Dan, what did you do next as far as music goes?
I was on the coattails of everybody. I never started the band or picked members. I was just kind of there, and whatever happened, they just went along with it.
Your next band was what?
Me and Bill stayed together, and at the state fair, he said he ran into a bass player and a singer, which was Jim Kane and Denny Waite.
From the Victors.
Yes. I can't remember where we had a practice, but I remember Jim found a drummer there that was doing this drum solo, which Tom Murray just, he'd never stop. He did a drum solo in front of Gene Krupa for a half hour. All the kids were sitting there to see Gene Krupa. And Tom gets up there. I was all embarrassed. I was hiding behind a door. But Tom liked to play that much, and I give him credit for his ego.
Was this at the state fair or somewhere else?
Yes. Jim found him at the state fair, I think.
Okay. So that band turned into?
The Litter. And I'm going to tell a story that I believe is true.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I had a fan club president in the Tabs called Jamie Covell. I don't know if you remember, but all these girls popped out at WDGY when we were going to do an interview there. Mm. And I got pictures of that on there. We did distortions. And from what I heard, she sent distortions to Deneen, Scott Deneen.
That's the first album by The Litter.
Yes. And Scott Deneen listened to that album, and he booked us in Chicago. We thought we were gods, at least I did. And we played this little dump, tiny little place. There was about five girls there. And we just grew into, the people thought we lived there. We played there so often.
In Chicago.
Some thought we were from Detroit. But Scott Deneen knew all the owners of the ball clubs all over the United States. So wherever we went, and there was a national band playing, we got to play in front of them. So that was pretty exciting. We were the one-hit wonder for Action Woman. And if you've ever heard of Nuggets, they have four CDs. One-hit wonders from bands like Paul River and Raiders. We got on that. I have no idea how we got on that. And I've also heard we're on five different albums from bands around the country, the world, that liked the Action Woman and put them on their album. I never made any money. I couldn't pay my rent. We went pretty far. I mean, we just didn't quite get to the top 10 national bands in the world. So.
Action Woman, of course, written by Warren Kendrick, the local songwriter and producer.
And Bill Strandloff did that lead. He also did the lead for Soul Searching, the only songs I liked that The Litter did. Drives a couple members that were in The Litter just nuts.
And Soul Searching, also written by Warren Kendrick.
Yes, exactly. Correct?
And Rick, how about you? After the Tabs came to an end, what did you do as far as music?
It was a sad period in my life, the Tabs coming to an end. But I managed to pick myself up by the bootstraps, and I got in another band called the CA Quintet.
From St. Paul?
Actually, they were not from St. Paul. They were from North St. Paul, because Ken and his brother, Jim, lived in North St. Paul. And then Doug Reynolds, I think he lived in Roseville, and Tom Poling also is from Roseville.
By the way, they were a very famous band in their own right.
By the way, Dan just reminded me, they were a very famous band in their own right.
Well, of course, CA Quintet, well known now for their super collectible and ultra rare album, Trip Through Hell, which you're playing on.
Yeah, that was interesting on that. I mean, we did a lot of recording at Dove Studios back then.
Out in Bloomington.
Out in Bloomington. I played on quite a few of the songs on the album, and then I left the band. Do you want the story of why I left the band? It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Go ahead. We can.
Well, the Vanilla Fudge were coming to town, and I really wanted to see the Vanilla Fudge, and so I went out and paid my $7 or whatever it was for a ticket to see the Vanilla Fudge. Then, and that was pretty far in advance, so then the band got a gig. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to see the Vanilla Fudge, man. Oh, no, you got to play this gig. I said, no, I'm going to go see the Vanilla Fudge. And Ken says, you go see the Vanilla Fudge and you can kiss the CA Quintet goodbye. I says, well, I'll see you later. So I went and saw the Vanilla Fudge. And here's the irony. The Vanilla Fudge didn't show up. And I had to listen to 1910 Fruit Gum Company and question mark in the Mysterians in place of the Vanilla Fudge and lose my gig with a band.
That story was actually written up in the local newspaper, and apparently when it was announced that the Vanilla Fudge were a no-show, the kids didn't take that too well.
And yeah. Yeah, I was one of them.
Caused an adverse crowd reaction.
Yeah, and you know, and give these guys the benefit. I mean, they really tried hard to please the audience, question mark. I mean, they were both terrible bands, but they did their best, you know. So, but there was no hope for these fellas. But well, anyway, so I was out of the CA Quintet, but after that. And you know, it's funny. I months or whatever later, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I used to fall asleep with the radio going, and I heard this music, and I thought, "Wow, that sounds familiar." And I'm listening, and then they played the whole album on the radio, and I go, "Wow, that's." Wow. I was really surprised because I didn't know that they had released the album after I had left the band. And so, but yeah, it's become pretty popular now. And who would have known when we were recording this that it was going to be turned into what it did?
Okay, let's get up to date and find out what you guys are doing these days. Dan, what are you up to? Are you doing anything musically?
No.
Do you listen to any music?
No.
Do you want to be in a band again?
I can't.
Okay.
Do you want more?
Yes.
You don't want to hear that whole story again about me getting sick and dying and everything, do you? Okay.
No, we don't want
I'm stopping.
It's kind of a grave story.
Yeah.
Let's do it this way. Dan, do you miss being in a band?
I was in the coolest thing, being in a band. I just thought I was a god. I had an ego, and I was doing what I wanted to do. I couldn't pay my rent playing in a band, so I had to get a job, and I kept on playing. I'm sitting at home. I live in a beautiful place. I'm living better than I've ever lived in my life.
And, Dan, what's the last CD you listened to?
I love Tramp. And my Fast Eddie. I was in a band called Fast Eddie, and I was a band called Tramp.
Rick, what are you up to these days?
Interesting question. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm still playing music.
That's cool.
I don't know anything else. I'm too dumb to be anything else. A drummer.
And what bands are you with?
I'm playing with Sherwin Linton. I've been with him for about 13 years now. It's the longest I've ever been in a band. It's the longest I've ever been at a job.
So, Rick, you started playing drums in what year? Playing with bands, I mean.
Playing with bands. Okay, probably about 1964, somewhere in
there. And you've never quit all?
No, there was a period. Let's see, I played up until about 1975. Then my first wife and I, we went out to California, and I was a part of a cult.
Blue Oyster Cult?
I'd rather not get into that because I could create all kinds of problems for myself.
Leave his oysters alone.
Yeah. They were raw. And who likes raw oysters? Anyway, so then I came back here. I came back to Minnesota in 95. My father wasn't doing well, and that gave me a good excuse to get out of the cult. And It's interesting because I came back here and I hooked right up with Jerry Francis, guy who I played with, and we played together in the Lancers and the Accents and the Sages together.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And so he was playing in a band, and so we started. I figured the music had passed me by, and I thought, well, you know. But I come back here and they're still playing the same old stuff. And I, hey, this is great. And so I've been playing ever since 95 and been in quite a few bands again. You know, I don't know what it is with me. I mean, I probably, you know, you got the list on the bands that I've been in. I don't understand if my deodorant keeps giving out on me or what it is. But I'm only in a band for a while, and then I'm in another band.
That's good, though. When you get dumped by one, you're picked up by another.
Well, you know, I did this interview with this guy named Lester Schuft, and I says, yeah, I've been in about 35, 40 bands. And you can look at that like, well, they hate you, or you're good.
Right.
But anyway, so... yeah, I just, you know, I started playing again and started teaching again. And when I got back here, and I'm not a very good teacher, but, you know.
You're talking about drum lessons?
Drum lessons. Yeah, so that's all I've been doing.
Are you still married?
No, I've been married twice.
Okay.
And I figure three strikes, and you're out.
Okay, all right.
So I figure I'm done with the marriage routine.
Never for me.
Okay.
Oh, way to go, Dan.
You know, that doesn't surprise
me.
I'm
the only smart one.
Dan, Rick, thank you for taking the time to stop out at Sunrise Sound today and for sharing with us your memories of your time with the Tabs.
That's fun. Good seeing you.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Yes, thank you, Tom.
40 or 50 years ago, I would have never thought that I'd be doing an interview about the Tabs.
Exactly.
You know, that's kind of nice to know.
All right, thanks, guys. The preceding interview was recorded on June 1st, 2013 at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Denny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MiniPawMusic.com.